Welcome. Good afternoon if you're in New York. Welcome to the Mind Behind Leadership here at live on talkradio.nyc. We're on our new slot, 5 p.m. on Monday Eastern, which means we're the drive time show. This is great. I'm actually broadcasting live from Sydney, so it's bright drive time here as well, but in the morning, and it's normally a lot busier when it's not in lockdown. Look, over the next few weeks on this new slot, we've got a lot of very exciting guests. We've got a variety from all over the globe. This gives us an opportunity to discuss what's happening, the changing business environments, leadership, and the impact it's got. We've got lots of things that are happening. The US and the UK are opening up. Australia's closing down. Today's guest on this, the first one in a new slot, is perfectly placed to give us a view on what's happening globally. That's because I'm absolutely delighted again. We've got Russell Dalgleish. Russell is the chair and co-founder of the Scottish Business Network. He's an advisor to private businesses and government. He's been listed in the top 100 most influential entrepreneurs in the UK and is a non-executive director for a number of businesses and organizations. Russell, good to see you.
Great to see you too. I can't distinguish that Australian twang yet. Has it still got time to develop?
I've still got that Brooklyn. I've still, you know, 4 years in New York still keeps me in North Brooklyn. I'm just listing out all these things that you're involved with, Russell. How do you find the time?
That's a brilliant question. So I've held a number of chief exec or managing director roles. And I found those positions that ate my time. So my time was completely blocked out. I find today when I have what we call a portfolio career, I have plenty of time because I can choose how to allocate my time and I don't get sidetracked into, you know, like a three-hour meeting or something.
Yeah.
Those things don't exist in my life. So I simply have a light touch in a number of different areas. And you know what? I love it. Because it allows me to also meld in the things I love doing outside work. So since I turned 50, I became very keen on running, for example. So it gives me the time to do that and also to travel. I've only had 4 flights this year so far, but more of that hopefully to come.
Yeah, travel's a luxury, but it looks like you're probably going to get a lot more options. Look, The one how we met was through the Scottish Business Network, and if anybody's listening and doesn't kind of understand the background, they'll probably get from our accents that we're both Scottish, hence the reason. But give us some of the background to that. Why did it start? You're a co-founder of it. What was the thinking behind it?
Well, Scottish Business Network is what we call a diaspora organisation. So it's an organisation where the commonality of membership is people have an interest in a particular country, or in our case, a nation. Scotland having representation at Soccer World Cups, but doesn't have its own army. So Scotland is a nation. So we developed this about 5 years ago when our initial ambition was simply to gather Scots together in London, with the idea that they would help other Scottish businesses in Scotland to win new contracts. Mm-hmm. And it's grown and expanded since then. And the last 18 months during COVID lockdown has just been astonishing. So we now have this enormous selection of people with an interest in Scotland, not necessarily Scottish, but with a passion for things Scottish, right across the world, integrated as a community and all working and supporting each other. So basically, someone told me over the weekend that I am Scotland's self-appointed salesman. And you know what? I like that.
You just touched on something really important there. Nation versus a country. Can you just expand on that?
So we're all familiar with countries. Countries like the United States or countries like Australia. But Scotland is more like, you could almost call it like a state. So if we think about those countries that start with the word United, United Arab Emirates, United States, United Kingdom, they all contain, in the US, they contain individual states, mm-hmm. and in the UK, they contain individual nations. Scotland is one of those nations. So Scotland has had a number of powers devolved from the central government in London that Scotland looks after itself, including we have our own First Minister in Nicola Sturgeon and our own health service, our own education sector. But we're part of the United Kingdom. So we end up being this nation. We're also unique in terms of historical reasons and the fact that Scotland maintains its own rugby club, it maintains its own soccer club as well. So we are represented at international events as Scotland. However, when it comes to the Olympics, we're represented as the United Kingdom. So there's a bit of a dichotomy there. But what's most important is that we're treating this thought of belonging. So we see the world today that people want to belong. You know, I know that there's a particular Glasgow soccer team that appeals to you. You belong to them or they belong to you. And just like that, so we have people around the world who feel this affinity with Scotland or this sense of belonging. And their sense of belonging may be because they studied there or they went on holiday there or they just have a outlandish fascination with Outlander. Whatever it is, they've got this sensation and they want to find out more. And our job at SBN is simply to share that information as to what's happening in Scotland and how you can get involved.
So where, you said it started in to kind of connect businesses or people in London who were tended to be leaders or businesses. It's stretched a little bit further in London now.
It does, yeah. So we've now introduced an ambassador programme. We now have 22 ambassadors representing Scotland in cities around the world. So we have ambassadors in the US, in Los Angeles, in San Francisco, in Salt Lake City, in Utah, in Texas, in Houston, in Texas, but also across Europe, from Holland into the Middle East, in Dubai, in Singapore, and in Melbourne. And the idea is that within over the next 5 years, we're going to appoint a Scottish ambassador to every single city in the world. China's going to be a stretch, but we'll get there as well. Now, with those ambassadors in place, they can then support and help local Scots in that area. Initially, we focused on business, but we're now starting to reach out to look at art, to look at education, and to look at charities.
You do realise I'm based in Sydney at the moment. We don't talk about Melbourne, okay? That's just so you know.
I should point out that I'm currently at final interview for our first ambassador to Sydney.
Nice. Talk to me. Why is the Scottish business relevant? Business network relevant here, or likes of in New York? I know you've got a good base in New York as well.
Well, in both the States and in Australia, there's a really keen understanding of what Scotland is and a desire by people to have a relationship with that particular part of the United Kingdom. So there have been huge success with Scots moving out to the US. We all know about Scottish communities in North Carolina, but we've also identified deep links for the Scottish community in Utah, and we build those connections. But if you look in Australia, I don't think you could go to any small hamlet across Australia without coming across someone who has ancestral links to Scotland. And we want to build those and allow opportunities to come to life simply through those connections. You know, to speak to someone whose granny was brought up in Alloa and they're now running a major enterprise in Australia, they've probably got a keen interest potentially in maybe helping a young entrepreneur from Alloa. You know, these connections all work, and you should never underestimate that that sense of belonging that we have. You know, if you come across someone from your hometown or someone with an interest in your hometown, you're immediately drawn to them.
It's interesting. We talk about business communities, and we kind of try to find that middle ground. It's interesting how trust is built up really quickly just by having some common interest.
What a wonderful word to choose. I was discussing that today, this word trust. 18 months ago, we developed trust through what we called face-to-face meetings. Mm-hmm. And our assumption was the only way to really get to trust someone was to meet them. Now, if you're running a global organization such as SBN and you're doing it on pennies because it's a not-for-profit, traveling around the world meeting people is not really an option. So we'd moved from about 2018 to using tools such as this to communicate with people. Yeah. Now we're Scottish. We can do it online and it won't cost anything. So it was always going down well. But since lockdowns happened, we've really developed techniques about developing trust online without meeting people. And it's all about saying you're going to do something and doing it, turning up for the call at the right time, following up on the actions. But trust also comes about the fact that you have some kind of common experience. And we saw, if you think about the when gold was discovered on the American West Coast, people would travel there, but then very soon after, criminals started to get involved. So when you arrived off the boat from Scotland, if someone met you on the landing and they said they were Scottish as well, you immediately assumed trust. Yeah. So we've seen trust being used in a negative way as well. But we've discovered that it's just so easy to make connections online to help to build this community. And then over time, trust develops. But we encourage everyone to use online as a way to develop that trust. But we don't know where this world's going either. So I don't know if I'll ever be allowed out of Scotland or you'll ever be allowed out of Sydney. We can assume we will, but yeah, that world might not come back again. So we have to develop new ways to trust each other. And online allows us to do that.
Yeah, it's interesting. And especially, you mentioned the West Coast of the US. Virtually every time I'm there and I jump in an Uber or a cab or something and someone says, where are you from? I tell them, they tell me they're Scottish. And I say, where are you from? Well, I don't quite know. And it's actually three or four generations, but their first reaction is they are Scottish, not that they've got Scottish heritage. And there's that connection that they want to talk.
What wonderful examples. I was 2 years in San Jose, in California, and I got that all the time. But today's a quite remarkable day for Scottish people, because today is the 250th anniversary of the birth of Sir Walter Scott. So this was an author, a man whose books we really struggle to understand now. 250 years he invented historical fiction. But at the time that he was a writer, he was the most dominant, best-known writer in the world. And he wrote about Scotland. Scotland came out in his stories, but he did something else as well. This amazing man, Sir Walter Scott, was a hugely successful entrepreneur. He was a man who saw his entire business fortune lost. On equivalent value, he found himself £11 million sterling in debt, and he didn't go bankrupt. He just kept on writing books in order to pay off that debt. And that's a Scottish trait. We don't want to be owing someone something. But there's something very important Sir Walter Scott did as well. He invented, in one of the greatest moments of marketing, he invented the modern Scotsman. He invented us by giving us the kilt to wear. Not the Highland dress, but this more modern version. And he did this because the British king was coming to Scotland and he wanted us to dress. Now, Graham, I'm sure you've been to some dinners wearing the kilt and you know the effect you have. So we should all honour Sir Walter Scott today.
Yes, I have been to many dinners with a kilt on. It's certainly a scene grabber in certain places. And Walter Scott's actually got a phenomenal, anybody in New York, go to Literary Walk in Central Park, and there's a superb statue of Walter Scott there, right opposite Robert Burns. Yep. Down at the bottom end near Shakespeare, it's got all the great writers, hence the Literary Walk. But it's interesting to actually see. It was something I stumbled on in Central Park. I saw two great Scottish writers. We're going to go to a break in a moment, Russell. After the break, kind of let's look at what are the opportunities for partnerships when we look at between Scotland or the UK and Australia and also the US. You're listening to The Mind Behind Leadership live here on talkradio.nyc. We're lucky enough to have Russell Dalgleish, who is the chair and co-founder of the Scottish Business Network. We will be back after these messages.
Have you ever thought of reinventing yourself? Are you looking to create a new life's journey? Hi, I'm Kevin Barbaro, host of Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 5, 8 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live to hear me and my guests from a variety of different backgrounds. As a former college coach and a current full-time actor and owner of multiple companies, my show is as eclectic as my life. That's Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Andow, for the show A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m., so tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to The Mind Behind Leadership. We're speaking with Russell Dalgleish. Russell, we'll talk about the opportunities for trade partnerships and everything in a moment. Something you mentioned earlier, that you've kind of got time on your hands now, so I might tap you up for some time. However, I'm curious, what led you to kind of going from corporate to entrepreneurship? What led you to kind of making that move and then making the move to where you are now?
Well, I've spent quite a lot of time studying leadership, trying to understand what is a leader and what makes a leader tick. And I've read an awful lot of books about leadership, and there seem to be more books coming out almost on an hourly basis today. But I came to terms with the fact that before one can become a good leader, one's got to understand who we really are. So I spent about 2 years actually looking at, who was I really? What was I actually good at? Was I actually very good at being a chief exec, for example? Mm-hmm. People asked me to take that role on, and I delivered it, and the companies were successful. But I knew in my heart that wasn't really what I was good at. So I went through and decided, what was I best at? And what I'm best at is communicating, and I'm best at building partnerships, connecting people, being there to support and help people. And if you look at my LinkedIn, it'll tell you that my reason is to help other people. So that's how I decided to live my life. And that's what made me step away from the corporate world, initially almost doing side projects while I would back a couple of startups. And then I got more and more involved in that. And I've subsequently developed quite a reputation for helping others to move their businesses forward. Not so much in startup now, more in what we call scale-ups. So helping people have got to a certain stage with their business and helping them to accelerate that growth.
What do you get out of that then? You like helping people, and I can see what kind of everybody else gets from that. What does Russell get?
So I'm clever enough as a business person to make sure that the activity I do generates money here and there, which allows me to continue doing it. And provided that's my life, I'm happy. You know, my goal isn't to make millions and squirrel it away in a bank account. That's not what turns me on. What I really get out of it is a sense of accomplishment. Mm-hmm. You know, as human beings, I think that's what we strive for in life. We talk about making a difference, but actually making a difference is quite difficult to actually understand if we've done it or not. But helping other people, You know, when you help someone and you make an introduction, and in business, it's really important. We build strategies, we implement structures, we drive process. But every now and then, there's almost what feels like a chance meeting, which develops into something else, which over time can transform our businesses. And that's what I discovered I'm really good at. I worked it out that what we're really good at, we remember. So I remember Graham did a podcast with me in New York and had told me he was moving to Australia. So when he called me and said, would I do a podcast? I'd say yes. I remember that. And I remember the fact to suggest to people that as potential future guests for your show. What I don't remember is things about tax or accountancy. I don't have the ability to hold that. So by focusing on what we're really good at, no, what we're honest, like to be honest with ourselves, what do we really, really like? That's the key. So what I get out of it is I get this incredible sense of fulfillment, and it drives me. You know, I'm up early in the morning and I work till late in the evening just because of the thrill of it. And if you look at Scottish Business Network, it's kind of, you know, someone said to me, how will you know when Scottish Business Network's a success? And I said, well, I'll be dead. It will have managed to outlast me. So that's the success. No, as long as it continues to help this mission of bringing Scots together and just using that connectivity to help each other, I'm happy.
Nice. Interesting thing you said. Another interesting thing you said, the sort of identifying what we're good and best at. And you said, I think I heard you say something. No, I was a chief executive. I was chief exec of businesses. Oh. It was working well. We were making good money. But this is what I was good at. Most people look for an external confirmation of what they're good at. So if they're a chief executive and the business is doing well, they would normally take that as, well, that must be what I'm good at. So what kept you being curious?
I listened to myself. Hmm. So some people call it prayer. But to me, I know when I'm comfortable, when I'm happy, you know, when I feel I'm doing the right thing. I also know when I feel I'm doing the wrong thing. So that understanding of me, you know, like I did 2 years of being brutally honest with myself to work out what I was actually good at. And once you got to the end of that, if you started to do those things you thought you were good at, it's just incredible. I tell you, I help a young lady who runs a business in a slum in Delhi. And I donate a little bit of money, but I'm always there to help her. I'm encouraging. I blast out messages about what she does. And she's transforming. She's a change maker. You know, the difference she is making to young girls in India is truly incredible. That to me is the satisfaction in what I do.
Yes. So when we look at them, so you've taken those skills, you've taken the skills as kind of a corporate, as a chief exec, you're taking them, you're connecting people all over the world, and now you're looking at trade and partnerships and opportunities between the UK or Scotland and different places. So what kind of opportunities begin to jump out then when we're coming at it from a point of connection? Because my guess is different types of opportunities that come up.
It comes from the conversations. Mm-hmm. So I will have conversations with people. And, you know, I the studying of things. So if someone says, I'd like to buy you a coffee, Russell, I say, no, let's do a 10-minute phone call. So in 10 minutes on the phone call, I can work out whether or not I can help that person. Then if I can work out I can help them, typically it'll be through a connection. Yeah. So I'm probably the best connected person in Scotland, if you like. So because of that, it makes it the connection I'm likely to make for you is likely to have a Scottish element, but hopefully it'll be done in such a way to help you just move that next step down the line. So for example, I've just recently been appointed by the Department of International Trade in the UK. Mm-hmm. So this is the organization that helps with trade and with inward investment. And they've asked me to do just the most marvelous thing. They've asked me to see if I can identify entrepreneurs in the US or in Australia or anywhere in the world who think by opening a base in Scotland, they could move their business forward. So my job now in that role is to explain to the world what the benefits of Scotland are. And the benefits are Scotland's talent. Scotland has the most incredible, highly educated, hardworking, and not at the high end expensive talent that can help you move your business forward. Primarily looking at research and development, but also engineering. But just these skills that we have today, there's people sitting there in Scotland who can help you. It can also act as a landing point, the perfect landing point. You know, if someone was to be coming to America and I talk to technologists, they go, I want to be in Silicon Valley. You know, that's where I want to be. You then come and base themselves in Silicon Valley and go, do you know how expensive it is here, Russell? And you just realize that's not where you want to be. So my argument would be, we want you to come to the UK, but not London. Come to Scotland. The talent's there, and you're going to be able to build and accelerate the growth from your company from there.
So what opportunities does that give? So we're looking at kind of partnerships. What kind of partnerships are being created and are you looking for in across the globe? I was going to say the US and Australia, but let's not limit it.
Primarily, it's in the area of technology. Mm-hmm. So primarily, if I look at organizations, so I was talking to a company this morning in Ankara, and they've built their business probably as far as they can build it geographically based there. They need to come and work in an ecosystem that will support them to accelerate the growth of that business. So they're a perfect kind of company to come to Scotland. If we look at particular sectors, so pharmaceutical sector is very strong, biochemistry, but also fintech, also data. Scotland as well is moving forward in space. But the key one at the present moment is I'm looking to speak to any companies who have an interest in technologies to help address climate change. We're currently 3 months away from the UN summit on climate change, which is going to take place in Glasgow. And we're now looking to try to start pulling together those companies. So any company in particular at the moment who has a product or service appropriate for helping to address some element of climate change, and it could be, you know, it could be energy production, it could be just any element of service where it's going to reduce that pull on the energy demands and the creation of CO2, really keen to speak to them and to look at bringing them to Scotland so that they'll be working in an environment that will surround them with support.
Scotland's got a deep history and heritage in innovation, and we'll talk about that after the break, because I know that that's one of the driving forces, and I think most people that I speak to tend to be quite surprised with what's come out of Scotland historically. You're listening to The Mind Behind Leadership, and we're speaking with Russell Dalgleish. We're on talkradio.nyc. We'll be talking innovation in Scotland right after the break.
Uninformed about menopause and how it impacts on your life? Hi, I'm Pat Duckworth, women's health strategist and host of the Hot Women Rock radio show, empowering women leaders at menopause. Join me every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. UK time on talkradio.nyc for interviews with inspirational women who will share their top tips to rock your world.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Mm-hmm. Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to The Mind Behind Leadership. We're speaking with Russell Dalgleish, the chair and co-founder of the Scottish Business Network. We're talking innovation. Scotland has a proud tradition and history of innovating. What kind of some of the things that surprise others when you speak to them just about how Scotland's been involved in the past?
Well, there's a rather wonderful book called How Scotland Invented the Modern World, which shows traces on how various inventions from the telephone to the television had Scottish influence in that development. And it comes from a country that had a very strong engineering background. So if we think about what engineers do, engineers use their intellect to overcome challenges. And that, you know, whether it's bridge building or anything, that's the engineering conundrum. But Scotland's moved that innovation forward into new areas that we wouldn't have considered. So if I think about what makes me proud about Scotland's innovation recently, it's been social innovation. So Scotland, the first country in the world to offer period products to girls and women for free. Now that started a ripple effect around the world, and that came from social change within Scotland. Something else in Scotland that's not well known is the fact that it's now a major centre for data. So this is for research and informatics or for the processing of space data. You know, we have a fledgling space sector now looking at launch pads and identifying those. But the key differentiator is that these, some of the world's most powerful computers are based in Scotland. And you know, there's a joke about the fact that one of the problems with quantum computers is you have to keep them cool. So Scotland's quite a good place to do that. but more importantly, it's to do with the talent again. So it's that we have the people on the ground in Scotland who can do the research and can do the focus to actually bring these things to light. And as innovation has then come along in parallel with entrepreneurship. So when I left school to go to college, the dream was that people would get jobs in banks or the civil service. I got a job in a bank. People now leave schools to create companies. We're now building out a integrated ecosystem right across Scotland so that we can bring together the support and networks round about these entrepreneurs in order that they can build the innovative companies of the future. And that's what that kind of on the ground, that momentum's happening. And we could know we're going to witness it a lot round about COP26. You know, if you do a search on news channels, the word Scotland has never been more popular than it is today. And that's because the UN summit is in Glasgow, in the United Kingdom, but everyone describes Glasgow as Glasgow, Scotland.
Yeah.
So that opportunity at the present moment to deal with what we're going to do as the world starts to look at Scotland. So one of the things that we did at Scottish Business Network was to create Net Zero Scotland, which is pulling together smaller companies so that they can understand how they can go on this journey along the route to reduce their CO2 emissions. All innovation, all new thought.
Why is that important to you? Because we're going to talk about the climate summit. In fact, let's talk about it now. And I know that the climate change summit is important for Scotland, but this is kind of the theme of some of the discussions that we've had, the net zero. Why do you see that as important, Russell?
So the UN public, the UN probably answered that question last week A report was published which was a summary of 14,000 separate scientific investigations to see was the climate warming, if the climate was warming, what was the reason for that. And the overwhelming evidence that came back was that it was man's activities and actions, or mankind's activities and actions. So there was a need to address that. And Scotland's taken the position that that's something that we want to help with. So we want to use our innovation and our talent to come up with solutions, really to be the laboratory for the world. So we have tidal, we have wind, we have hydro. We're now looking at CO2 capture. We're looking at so there's a real interest in using the skills that we have at the universities to develop on that front. And we see different parts of the world will have different emphases within their culture about what type of developments they're going to do. And in Scotland, more and more that focus is coming to looking at climate change. And to be honest, it's coming from the schools. You know, overwhelmingly, the interest in young people is looking for ways to address climate change more than it's ever been before on any one subject.
And do you think that's unusual to Scotland that it's happening in the schools? Do you think there's more emphasis? Or?
I think we're seeing it happen right across the world. It just seems to be much more evident in Scotland. Okay. You know, Scotland was the first country or nation to declare the climate, you know, climate change was actually a climate emergency. So the populace are electing political parties that share that opinion. You know, Scotland's about to, the new Scottish government's been formed and it's going to be a coalition between the Scottish National Party and the Green Party. So there will be legislation which is going to be endorsed by a Green Party, a party whose entire purpose is to help us to look after the climate better.
So it sounds like there's a lot of opportunities going down that road for Links of Scotland. Are there any threats that you see in businesses that kind of go in that focus if other countries don't maybe give it as much of an emphasis?
I think we've all got to be adaptive within our own moral frameworks, yeah, based around about the type of industries we're doing. You know, we can't ignore in Scotland, for example, that we have a highly successful oil and gas sector. Mm-hmm. But what we can do is we can have interesting discussions about whether or not we should open up new oil fields.
Yeah.
So it's interesting watching these happen. One of our you could look at the US. So one of our SBN ambassadors is in Houston, and he was telling me that they were watching last year. They watched oil rigs being converted into wind turbine platforms. And now they're starting to watch oil rigs be converted into landing platforms for returning space rockets. And it's really interesting how we adapt to where the opportunity is in our world.
Yeah.
So it's I think one of the things we've got in Scotland is that we have a great stability. Mm-hmm. And that stability in tandem with the you know, something happened in 2014. Scotland had a vote on whether or not to become an independent, separate country. Yeah. And what was interesting wasn't the result. What was interesting was the fact that we had a turnout of almost 90% in a democratic country, never seen anywhere outside Russia, 90% turnout and no violence. No violence at all. Now, that got amazing coverage around the world, and the coverage was, people went, well, of course, they're Scottish. That's what we would expect. So that character trait is actually getting reflected in our society.
It's interesting. 2014, I was actually living in Wales at the time, and we deliberately drove up, because I didn't get a vote, and we deliberately booked an apartment for the weekend in Glasgow for the day after the vote. And it just kind of just felt that I had to be there, regardless of which way the vote went.
Yeah.
And I remember walking around, especially in the Merchant City, walking around that night on the Friday night when the vote was known and the people who had voted yes had lost. And I'd never sensed such pride in a place. I'd never actually been so proud to be Scottish, genuinely. Yeah. The people were walking about, knew they'd got a voice. It didn't matter if they won or lost. Of course it did. But there was that pride there that they'd got out in almost 90%. They'd had a voice. It was a really interesting atmosphere that weekend. There was something really pulled people together. One of the things you mentioned earlier was it gets a lot of entrepreneurship. People are beginning to look to be entrepreneurs. And I also took a note earlier that, you know, when we talked about leaders, yeah. I sometimes worry that everybody feels that that I see that are coming through from schools, everything that's been pushed away. When we look at Shark Tank or Dragon's Den, and then there's leadership programs, The Apprentice and everything like that. Everything that's been pushed is you need to become a leader or an entrepreneur. Do you see that that's appropriate, inappropriate? Do you think it's helpful?
It's difficult. I just think these are positive things to want to be, mm-hmm. rather than, I want to become, I want to take a job in a big corporate and slowly work my way up some ladder. I've spoken to quite a lot of young people in the things I've done. For several years, I would take six young entrepreneurs to Silicon Valley, and we would tour around in a minibus, and we would see how the valley actually operates. And it got you time to speak to people. And what I get with young people today is not so much that they want to be leaders or they want to be entrepreneurs, but they want their life to matter. So mm-hmm. it's not about, I don't believe it's so much now with younger people about the accumulation of wealth, which it probably was for my generation. You know, we had to, we wanted to go out there. I remember, I don't know if you remember, the UK in the 90s, we had Thatcher's government coming to the end. We had comedians with loads of money. Let's make loads of money. Yeah. And I think that's kind of changed now. And I think things like climate change are something on that. I think social change as well, and about this, you know, everyone's the same, and removing this idea about, gender being something that can stop you, even though it still is, and we've got to get over that, and also that diversity element. So I think that the generation that's coming out now are much more rounded about the type of people that we'd like to see in our world.
Yeah, the reason I ask, I'm working with some corporates where we're doing leadership programs, but we're also doing programs where it's okay not to be a leader. Don't feel that everybody needs to go down that route and get down to that point. Business has changed then over the last year or so. I've already said at the very beginning, US and UK are opening up, Australia's closing down. There's talks about US in certain states closing down again. How does that impact the kind of the discussions that you're having, businesses that you see? What's the changes, apart from everything being online now?
So I wrote a piece for a Scottish newspaper yesterday, and I mentioned the fact that though we've seen things that have affected trade negatively, such as Brexit that we've seen in the UK and Europe, and COVID, when we look back on this time in the future, the historians will say this was the tipping point for technology. We have now all accepted technology as part of our life.
Yeah.
We don't sit in the office going, the computer's not working, let's get the IT guy to fix it. Mm. We've, a large number of us have spent 18 months at home, and we've now realized we have to understand how that thing works.
Yeah.
We can't just get told to use this video conferencing thing called Zoom or Teams. We'll have to work out what the individual buttons do so that we can participate. So technologically, we have to understand and use the systems, and we also have to understand how to use them to benefit ourselves and our businesses. And that's taken a complete re-education for people. And I think that's the biggest transformation that's happened. And the outcome for business is that your market has moved from your geographically close market to global. You're a perfect example of it, Graham. You were in New York, now you're in Sydney, you're broadcasting to a global market. It doesn't matter. Yeah. But it requires a lot of effort to understand how that market works. But we've got the internet. Sit down, do the work, read the material, and you can understand how to build the connections to access a global market. That's the change of the last 18 months.
We'll dig a little bit more into that after the break. And also, Russell, I kind of want to dig into, we've got a lot about the business, a lot about your connections, we really want to find out how you manage to step away and how you manage to get that balance as well. Or as we call it over here, work-life integration, not balance, it's work-life integration. How do we do that? And you're listening to Mind Behind Leadership. We're live on talkradio.nyc. We're speaking with Russell Dalgleish. We'll be back after these.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Mind Behind Leadership live here on talkradio.nyc, New York City. I'm broadcasting here from Sydney in Australia, and we're speaking to Russell Dalgleish, who's in Edinburgh in Scotland, just outside Edinburgh. Let's get it right. Technology. We've used technology over the last year to change business. What technology have you maybe struggled with? What was the thing that Russell had to really dig in and get ready to use that maybe you didn't want to?
I don't think I've experienced that, because if I didn't want to, I didn't do it. I have an obsession with process, because to live the kind of life I lead, where I'm working on a number of different projects and with a number of different people all the time, I have to be quite careful how I build systems in order to manage that process to make sure the important things get done. Mm-hmm. I'm amazingly good at not doing unimportant things, because by definition, I shouldn't be doing them anyway. Yep. So I'm quite good at prioritizing. So I've used various systems to do that. I love Airtable, for example. I think it's one of the greatest pieces of application software that's come along. But I've not felt pressurized into using technology I've not been able to use. I think one of the things I've found, which is just truly incredible, is LinkedIn. You know, for free access to a system that can put me in connection with everyone on the planet, a large proportion of those on the planet in the business world, is just incredible. That's been wild.
It's interesting. I remember last year, round about March time, saying training, development will never work online. And I think it's probably the last time I ever said something will never work. And I should have known better. because, as you say, it's kind of it's opened up. Today I'm working in Sydney, the USA, and Europe. All from here. And it's incredible what it can actually do. So I genuinely think it's the last time I've ever said something will not work. Now it's like, let's just make it work. You get involved with a lot of things. You've mentioned newspapers, obviously interviews. You take young entrepreneurs on trips. You're connecting people. What do you enjoy most? What really gives you the biggest kick?
What I enjoy most is living in the moment. So unless I look at the clock, I don't know it's 10 to 11 at night here. I don't think about the fact that I'm talking to my computer screen while sitting alone in my office. I don't think about that. I'm at the present moment in a room with Graham having a conversation, and I'm totally focused on that conversation. And that's what gets me the most pleasure, is to be totally in the moment. And it also helps, I find it helps with things like stress, etc., because I only do the important things and I focus on them really carefully when I'm doing them. And I think that's the key to life. So there's not one thing I like doing more than anything else. I just really like the thing I'm doing at the time. That's what's important.
It's interesting. You know, I work with Dale Carnegie, and one of the principles on the book, How to Not Worry, How to Not Stress, is live in daytight compartments. And just kind of don't think about what's happened. Don't think too far in the future. Work on what's there, what's in front of you. This has been known for a long time.
Yep.
A long time. But it's difficult to do. So have you had a mentor? Is there somebody that you've seen? Is there someone that you look up to in business and you think, bang, they do it, they do it right, and that's been your kind of inspiration?
I'm incredibly lucky. So by building a network, I've found people who are the best at what they do. And I go to them when I want to ask about that thing. So I don't have a single mentor. I have a whole range of them. Some of them are like my business partners. Some of them are colleagues. Some of them are just friends. But these are the people who, so I know who to go to dependent on the thing I'm particularly, the challenge I'm particularly trying to overcome with at the time. And a lot of those challenges are to do with, how do I stay doing the right thing? How do I remain on track? Because for a lot of business people, they maybe bring it home. And there's no point me coming home and asking my wife, who's a acupuncturist, whether or not I should refresh my website. Why would she have an insight on that particular subject? It's not her specialisation. But if I come home and go, I've got this aching pain in my side, she's definitely the person to speak to. So I have this team of mentors who I go to dependent on what particular challenge I'm trying to overcome at the time. And it's, I listen to them. And if they're the specialists, I'm training for a marathon at the moment, hence my outfit. And I've got a friend who's an Olympic coach. And he's written me a 12-page training guide that goes day by day what I should do, and I just do it. Someone said to me, but you're overtraining. I said, I'm not. Based on his experience and his skills, I'm going to do what he says I have to do tomorrow, and that's what I do. And it's almost like giving it over. Why should I worry about it? He's the guy that's written the plan because he's the expert. Brilliant.
Is this the process part kicking in then? You kind of get a process from an expert and you follow it.
Yep.
How else do you relax? So you're training for a marathon. You've got, when is the marathon? Which one are you doing?
I'm doing the London Marathon on October the 3rd. I'm doing it for a charity based in London that helps homeless Scots. So it's in my wheelhouse, if you like. It's of course the thing Russell would be doing. And I think in leadership, if people are surprised by what you're doing, that to me is a warning sign. No, that's, why are you doing that? That's a bit surprising. We don't normally associate that with you. But if you can then explain the path with which you ended up there, then it's okay.
Do you see leaders doing that? Doing things.
Sorry, say again?
Do you see leaders doing that? Do you see leaders kind of doing things that maybe isn't in their wheelhouse, that they begin to stretch themselves?
Yes. And that's what leads to the stress. And I think a lot of it, I remember when I first took up a position as chief exec for a couple of £100 million turnover company. So I'd done it. I'd climbed all the way to the top of that ladder. And I thought, that's it. I've made it. And then I discovered I had a board who were the worst possible boss you could imagine. Because these were people who had no operational idea of running the company, but insisted on telling me what to do. And it ate time managing that. A disconnected board is just a nightmare. So I've kind of watched out for things like that and instead focus on who I really am. And when you focus on who you really are, you get people saying things to you like, you're authentic. You know, the voice you put out on LinkedIn, Russell, I can hear you saying those words. It kind of makes sense. And I like that, you know, because I've done so many training courses on how to optimize your use of LinkedIn, for example. So LinkedIn for me is my daily newspaper. Right. I'm the owner. I'm the proprietor of this newspaper, and I choose what the headline's going to be. And that allows that authentic voice to come out. And of course we're good when we're being authentic. Because is that what you would naturally expect us to be?
Yeah. It's interesting. And, you know, when I look at the traits of leadership, that's probably up there in the top three about someone being authentic, kind of empathetic, caring. All these kind of things come in and we look at how to be a leader and we look at all these processes potentially, but without the human touch in it. So we've got, and I know you're good into process, but without that human touch, Russell, it wouldn't kind of all come together. We're at the end of our time. Thank you so much for spending time with us. I know it's a little bit late in Edinburgh. You've been listening to The Mind Behind Leadership live here on talkradio.nyc. Thank you very much to Sam Leibovitz, our producer for today. We will be back next Monday, 5 p.m. Eastern, with The Mind Behind Leadership. Take care. Have a great week. Thanks again, Russell. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Did you know that nearly one in five adults in the U.S. battles mental illness? Hi, my name is Albert Dabba. I'm the host of the show Extra Innings. Extra Innings, I discuss the topics of wellness, mental health, and the experience of surviving multiple suicides within my family. Listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern to Extra Innings for discussions with sports figures, artists, mental health professionals, and many others. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Have you ever thought of reinventing yourself?
Are you looking to create a new life's journey?
Hi, I'm Kevin Barbaro, host of Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 5, 8 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live to hear me and my guests from a variety of different backgrounds. As a former college coach and a current full-time actor and owner of multiple companies, my show is as eclectic as my life. That's Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.